93.3 WMMR. It's Blake Dannon along with Preston Elliott today on a Sunday at 1 o'clock.
Morning, Blake.
That is interesting. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you.
And I know you've been thinking about this for the last couple of days hard. So this is going to be a very special next few hours.
Yeah, you know, not much would drag me in on a Sunday, but and it's a somber occasion. Of course, everybody knows by now who's a rock fan, specifically a Rush fan, that Neil Peart passed away a few days ago, and it was sudden and unexpected. And to people like me who have been, it's hard to find the words, who've been influenced, who've been, you know, have looked up to this particular guy for so many years, it's really hard. It's a real visceral feeling having this guy die suddenly like this. I was approached by Chuck D'Amico, our assistant program director, who said, hey, why don't you guys come in, you and Pierre, because Pierre is the best at doing tributes, and he's a huge Rush fan as well, and has over the years spoken to Getty and Alex many, many times. We've never had the opportunity to meet Neil. We'll talk about that at some point during this time, about the private nature of his life.
Yeah.
But we figured it'd be a good idea to get in here, spend some time sharing some stories, playing some music, playing some clips, and talking about a guy who was just one of a kind and so special on so many different levels as well. And to add to that, later on around 2 o'clock, our friend Mike Portnoy from Dream Theater is going to give us a call. Mike is one of the all-time biggest Neil fans and friend and influenced by him in so many ways. And, of course, he's one of the greatest drummers in the world, too. So it'll be nice to get his perspective and hear a few things about him. So we're going to go deep today. We're going to play some really great music that you normally don't hear on the radio. I'm excited about that. I spent some time over the last couple of days curating some tunes that I think would be cool to play this morning. So we've been given permission full steam ahead.
All right.
To do what we want to. And that's exactly what I want to do with starting this whole thing off, because Rush doesn't do anything half-assed. They dive in heads first. So we're going to begin the next couple of hours tribute to Neil Peart by playing one of my all-time favorite Rush songs, and I know a lot of people as well. This is Xanadu on 93.3 WMMR.
W MMR, everything that rocks, and they most certainly did, they still do, and he was nothing short of stellar. His name, Neil Peart. I'm Pierre Robert, along with Preston Elliott, who has already opened the program in our tribute, but good morning to you, Preston.
Hey, how you doing, Pierre?
Good afternoon, sorry. And on this lovely day, what a sad thing this is for us to take a look back at a true hero of yours.
Yeah, yeah, it was... to come in and try to boil down some music and some thoughts and so forth is a tough thing to do. And we've had to do it a lot over the past few years, people like Bowie and, you know, Prince and Glenn Frey and all these great musicians, and Tom Petty, who've passed and given us so much. It's a really hard thing to do. And I've spent the past couple of days thinking about, you know, reflecting about my own personal influence from Neil and Rush, the band, the music, the instrumentation, the philosophies, and all of that, and it's a lot. It's a lot to take in when you've been a big fan. You know,
it is a lot, and I mean, it speaks to that power of music.
Yeah,
I mean, how different music moves people in different ways. You also being a drummer, and his percussive style, I would say, unequaled.
Yeah, and groundbreaking as well. It's that's the thing about Neil, is that before he came along, we hadn't heard anything quite like that before.
Right.
And that doesn't happen very often. You know the names of the people who have been that way throughout the world of music, and you're like, oh, wow, they did something new that, you know, millions of people around the world that are instrumentalists haven't been able to do before, and it's nothing short of extraordinary. So he was very, very special.
Well, let's play a quick one here that you have selected that everybody knows, called Closer to the Heart, and then we will talk some more. You are listening to a tribute to Neil Peart of Rush, Preston and Pierre here on MMR. 93.3 WMMR and Rush, Closer to the Heart. The other songs we played in the opening of our tribute to Neil Peart is Xanadu, starting things out, and The Analog Kid, and a little piece of I Love You, Man. The great thing about the members of Rush is their incredible sense of humor, which we'll touch on over our special, right, Preston?
So very Canadian, too. I mean, it's, you know, they have this offbeat, awesome sense of humor. It's kind of dry but fun, and that's one of the things I loved about them, you know, is that they had this really intense, technical, serious music, but they were total goofballs.
Yeah.
You know, it's a beautiful thing.
Well, and so much comedy was presented in various points at the shows in a variety of ways. You know, everything from South Park references to,
the little vignettes that they would film.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And they had representation over the years of members of SCTV and, yes. All kinds of stuff that would pop up. Various actors would do short little videos in between their songs, or they themselves would be characters that they would dress up as and play off of, and it was so much fun.
The fun stuff is definitely there, and those Rush fans that have been there for a while know of that. But the serious stuff is that if you're going to be in a rock band that's going to carry on for any length of time, you've got to be in shape. And this piece that you selected from a 2012 interview, I believe, is Neil actually talking about that. And we were listening to this. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, you know what I mean? As musicians age, specifically singers, you know, they can't hit those notes anymore. It's just hard. And some people don't think about the drummers who have the most physical job in the band, being able to continue to play at a certain level into their later stage of life, later stage of the band. Well, when you've got a guy like Neil who crams as many notes as he possibly can into segments of songs, you got to think about as you get older and slowing down, and on top of that, being able to play song after song after song after technical song throughout the night over a grueling long touring schedule, which they were notorious for. He had concerns about that. And this was a great interview that he did on a Canadian television show. I'll get the details so we give proper credit to it. But it was him talking about aging and being able to continue to play and have that stamina. So this is a great clip.
The advancing years don't intimidate me in that way. Yeah. Just the fact, like you said earlier, drumming is so athletic, especially in this band, and the 3 hours that I play, what it takes out of me physically, and the aches and pains that are, you know, subsequent to that are real, you know, and I just have to realize that no athlete can expect to maintain a prime,
sure,
you know, infinitely. So just the fact that I've had it this long, and I still feel myself growing, like I said, in really exciting new ways, and physically a new command of the drum set. Even we're rehearsing right now for the tour's continuance, and even through the rehearsals, I really feel strong and smooth, the qualities that I most would have wanted to have when I was a teenager starting to play drums. I was thinking the other day when I was 17 years old or so, I went to see The Who at the old Coliseum playing Tommy. And I was with a bunch of friends and bandmates in a van, you know, as you do. And on the way home, one of the other guys said, "Do you think you could ever have that kind of stamina?" I said, "I don't know, you know," and I was laughing about that now.
You know, I think that interview might have been right as they were getting ready to do their Time Machine tour, which was in 2011, if I recall. And, you know, it was a few years after that. They retired in 2015. And I think that physically it started to, Neil wasn't able to perform at a level that he wanted to perform at, or started feeling it coming on. So that clip kind of speaks to that. You can only do it for so long. That's what he said. You know, an athlete can only do it for so long. And the same thing has to be considered for a musician who plays at a certain level like that.
Well, he'd also had some physical, this is before we knew about that he had brain cancer, which we didn't know, but he had had a lot of physical aches and pains, which he had attributed to the reason he wanted to stop touring, right?
Yeah. He was having, there were a couple of nights where he had some aches and pains that were so bad that I can't remember ever hearing a story of them canceling a show. Now, a band that it was together for 40 years probably canceled a show from time to time, but I don't remember ever hearing them having to cancel a show. And I think that they would have done anything to keep something like that happening. So he would play through the pain. And I think it started to lay the seed of maybe this is going to have to come to an end at some point. I don't think that the word is that the brain cancer, he had been fighting it for the past 3 years, which would have put it over the timeline of when they would have, you know, considered that as a reason to stop touring. I don't see this being that personally. I don't think that this happened until well after that they had finished touring. I think that physically he didn't think that he could play up to a level he wanted to play to. So it was time to hang it up. And he was a very private guy. We have some other clips we'll play in a little while about you know, things that are fairly simple that are good enough in life for him as far as being alone and reading and learning things and so on. He didn't have to have the gigantic stage. It was certainly something that he loved to do, but he had other aspects of his life that were important as well. So I think that walking away from the band, albeit why a difficult decision, wasn't what his life revolved around. But we'll get into some of those and play when we get a chance.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We come back. Our tribute to Neil Peart is just beginning. We have a lot of ideas of where to take it, and we hope that you're enjoying it. And we thank you for listening and tuning in on this special Sunday afternoon live broadcast. We'll be right back.
MMR rocks. MMR rocks, period.
And good afternoon. It's Pierre Robert along with Preston Elliott, and we're here to do a special tribute to Neil Peart, who we found out on Friday, although he had actually passed, I believe, Tuesday, but it wasn't announced till late Friday afternoon. The great drummer of Rush is no longer with us as a result of a three-year battle with brain cancer, and a gentleman just called who is, in effect, dealing with stage 4 cancer himself. And reminded us that the members of Rush encouraged people to give to any cancer-fighting organizations that are out there. It is a scourge that has plagued humanity for way too long. And hopefully sometime in our lifetime or our kids' lifetimes, we will see an end to it. But in the meantime, it has taken far too many people. But one of those happens to have been Neil Peart of brain cancer.
You know what I wanted to point out, Neil? I spoke to a friend of mine, which, by the way, it's been pretty wild because more so than any musical event that's taken place in, I don't know, in how long I can remember, I have been contacted by so many people. And not just listeners and fans of MMR and the morning show and know my relationship with Rush, but old friends of mine. My drum teacher, wow, when I was in sixth grade, got in touch with me through Messenger on Facebook. He's like, "Hey, man, how you doing? I know we haven't talked in decades, but I wanted to see how you are." Because I would come to him and I'd bring in Rush songs and I'm like, "Rusty, teach me this. Or I can't figure this part out. Can you help me out with this?" So he knew how much this man meant to me from a musician's point of view. And he got in touch with me and we had this nice conversation, and a few other people, old bandmates of mine, people from high school band and so on. I mean, like, you know, marching band and stuff like that. We're all contacting each other over the weekend. So there's been a lot of that. I'm wearing a t-shirt as well. It says, "I will choose free will." I made this shirt myself, had it
really
made. And so I was walking around with it yesterday and I was being approached by people left and right. Some knew me from the radio show, and others had no idea who I was and just came over and started talking and saying, "Man, it's so terrible to hear about Neil." It's been wild to see so many people touched by this. It's kind of a melancholy thing, but it's nice to know that so many people love this guy and appreciated what he did.
It speaks to also the community of music and how it brings people together. And MMR has been a gathering point when icons had died. I mean, I wasn't here at the time, but when Lennon was killed, people spontaneously gathered on Rittenhouse Square where the station was and hung out for over a day, to be close to the sound of MMR because we were playing Beatles music and Lennon music. You told me, by the way, this was as impactful for you as John's passing, John's abrupt passing. When Jerry Garcia died, we were across town on Independence Mall, and the same thing happened spontaneously. So the station is like a community center, if you will, to bring people together musically, just like individuals have touched you. Hopefully we're able to reflect some good energy to those who are out there.
And so my former bandmate had called me and we were talking about it. And, you know, you'd mentioned the fact that he had passed on Tuesday. We didn't find out until Friday. We didn't know that he'd been battling this for 3 years or so. And he said to me, and I thought it was great. He goes, "How typically Neil." He was such a private guy. It was just part of his nature. He was very shy. He liked not to make a big fuss. And in a little while, we'll play a clip of him speaking directly to that because that led to the creation of the song Limelight. That's what that song is essentially about. So we'll get to that in a little while. But another thing about Neil is his work ethic. It was, he was so determined. He knew what he wanted to do and he did it and he worked hard for it. And so did the band. And that was pretty much their mission was to work as hard as you can, earn what you earn, and then you can feel entitled to it because you've earned it. And there's a great clip here talking about the audience and earning the audience, if you wouldn't mind.
I'm feeling constantly having to earn it, I think, it is a good motivation for it. You know, I don't take for granted that people just admire what we do, so whatever we do, they'll admire. No, you know, I feel like, in fact, this is very true. Every audience, I feel like we have to earn them. You know, that we have to earn their dedication and their expenditure of time and energy and money to be there every single time. You know, every show, and it's an old show business thing, but I really feel that you're only as good as your last show. And that's the one thing I do like about touring. If you have a bad one, you get another chance.
So I thought a song that would speak directly to that ethic is this one. It's such a great message, and we're getting the opportunity to play some deeper cuts today, and that's exactly what we're going to do. So off of 2112, I've always loved the message of this song. You don't get something for nothing. You have to earn it. So we're going to play it. This is Something for Nothing, and it's off of 2112.
On MMR. From Power Windows, the song is Big Money. And if you're just joining us, I'm Pierre Robert, along with Preston Elliott. We're doing a special tribute to the late drummer Neil Peart from Rush, who we lost on Tuesday. Found out about it on Friday due to brain cancer. The impact is pretty phenomenal. And listeners are texting in left and right. Lost my big bro and Rush concert pal to AIDS in 1992. Neil was my hero, and I loved from the record where he wrote in Nobody's Hero, which is an amazing song that Neil wrote about going to a party with someone else's sexuality. It didn't interfere with mine, and that amazing song. Chef Mitchell is listening in San Francisco, huge fan. We've got Melissa and Jim and Delco. We've got Driving With the Windows Down, listening to Rush on this beautiful Sunday. Thank you guys for being there. Listening in Colorado, Karen and King of Prussia. We have Chris, my brother Jamie, passed away this week. And so I'm thinking of him as you're thinking of Neil. Thank you for this tribute. My son, whose name is Rush, got to meet Getty this year when his book came out. Great, great, great. We will miss Neil, the world's greatest drummer. And Vicky in New Britain, Neil Peart's books, which is another great aspect of who he was.
Yeah.
His books got me through some very difficult times. The reader really gets to know him through his stories and his motorcycle travelogues and his bicycle rides. He would ride a lot. On his bicycle in any given community and town that he was with and go on trips. Teresa in King of Prussia found that she's with the Prevent Cancer Foundation. They've had multiple donations in Neil's name. Is it 3.3 recently?
Yes.
Just in the last few days. So she reports to us that over $3 million in donations in Neil's name has come in. A lot of them, I'm sorry, a lot of them in Neil's name are coming in, which does not surprise us. So thank you, Teresa. And we have a listener on the line who I believe's name is Matt. And so let me see if I can do this correctly and bring Matt up. Hey, Matt, how are you?
Hey, this is actually Bill from Springfield, Delaware County. Hey, Pierre.
Sorry, I got the name wrong. There's
no
a Matt
wrong,
on
brother.
The list, and then there's a Bill. So, Bill, you're from Springfield, Delaware County. But you have a rather amazing story because you had the foresight to see this band early on. Is that correct?
I did, Pierre. I lived close enough to the Tower Theater. It's 1977. I saw them on the Farewell to Kings tour with this funky band with the lead singer with a striped shirt and polka dot vest, who was Tom Petty opening for Rush.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Do you remember
many
the
years later,
price?
I had the pleasure of dancing with Pierre in the aisle at the Tower Theater for Jay Giles reunion concert. So it's a wonderful thing, guys. What you're doing today, rock and roll, doesn't take a break on the weekend. I bless you both for being here today. You guys are the best. We appreciate you, fellas. We do.
Well, thank you, Bill, for listening. And again, for having the foresight to see. Imagine that. Tom Petty.
Wow.
And Petty was opening for Rush, or Rush was opening for Petty?
No, so Petty was on his first tour with Breakdown, was the only song that we really knew. And it was Rush's Farewell to Kings tour. So it was like, who are these guys? Oh, that song. They're
wow.
good. But it was amazing, Pierre. Thank you, Big President. It was an amazing thing, and you guys brought me right back to then.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Amazing. First first tour I went to see them was Signals. I was a high school student at that time. I was probably 14, 15 years old, something like that. And it was the first time I had ever seen widespread, out in the open, pot smoking going on everywhere.
Shut
my mind was blown. I'm like, why are the security not doing anything about those people passing that bong around over there? But it was amazing. That was the album that came out that was the first new album for me when I found out who Rush was, because by the time, you know, Tom Sawyer and so on had hit, that they Moving Pictures had been out for a little while. So it was the first album that I'd waited to get from Rush. And when Signals came, I got it. And I just wrapped my arms around it, and I listened to it today, actually, in its entirety, and it brought that back of that first, oh, this is brand new from Rush. I just got this. I can't wait, and I need to listen to every bit of it. And then I went to the tour. It was actually my first real concert. My first real rock concert that I went to was Rush Signals. And what a way to be indoctrinated into the world of rock and roll, because it was an incredible show.
That's so cool.
This is amazing, yeah.
Our tribute to Neil is going to continue, and in the next hour, shortly into the next hour, in fact, from a musician's perspective, we have a special guest who will join us.
Yeah, and I guess we'll do it on the back end of these commercials. Yeah. We'll return. Mike Portnoy, one of the greatest rock drummers that's ever sat behind a kit, is going to join us, and of course, a huge influence on his playing. Mike and I are the same age, so I'm sure we grew up listening to the same stuff, and when he heard Neil, it was... A switch was thrown, and it opened up a whole new world. So, and they were friends too. So this
oh,
is
really?
yeah they were acquaintances. Wow. He had showed me some pictures of his son Max when they came through town to play the R40 tour. He took Max to meet Neil and set him on Neil's drum kit on that stage with Neil there. He got to play on the drum kit, so I'm sure he'll probably tell us the story in a moment. So on the back end of the commercials, we'll talk to Mike Portnoy.
All right, stay with us. Our tribute to Neil continues in just a moment.
All the rock, all the time. MMR rocks.
And Pierre Robert along with Preston Elliott and a special guest who's going to join us in just a moment. But first, another piece of Neil talking that you wanted to mention, Preston.
Yeah, you know, the thing about Neil and his technical abilities and his approach to music was, one of the things I want to stress for those who may not be drummers is that how intended he was when it came to playing a part for a piece of music.
What do you mean intended?
What he played, it wasn't necessarily from feel. I mean, listen, he could play from feel if he wanted to, but when it came to constructing the music of Rush, they had intent in everything they did. They did it the way they wanted to because they felt that the music needed to be this specific way, and that is creating certain parts for certain reasons. There's a great clip of him explaining what it's like to come up with the right rhythm, the right fill, anything that fits into a song they're working on.
There's a whole list of problems to be solved. It's a little metaphor I got from rock climbing I thought was really interesting. When you're hanging somewhere on a cliff, the next move you make is a problem to be solved, and you're trying to attain a next set of goals and a next set of goals, and they're all interlinked. The construction of a song can be like that too. You have choices rhythmically and tempo-wise to push and pull the tempo here, to accompany the band here, to drive the band there, to lay back into a steady groove here. All these things become a part of your orchestration and the elements that you're going to juggle in terms of the form of your drum part. So what's the job to be done? This one opens up with a double time section, of course, where you're driving. You're going to drive that band. And then when it comes down into the verse sections, you want it just to groove along as an accompaniment. And then there are returns of the double time section throughout the song. Choruses where you want to be driving and pushing the band along. And then elements like the ride out that we'll discuss, where I'm just trying to lay down a steady groove that planes out for a while and then builds up once more to the acceleration of a double time section that's going to drive the band in through to the conclusion.
So that's just a thought process going into one song, and that's how I love that's the way that they work together, and that's the way that he thought about his parts. A very technical sensibility about him.
But a cerebral nature
about
it.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
It's 93.3 WMMR in Philadelphia, and I believe there's a special friend of the Preston and Steve show you would like to bring on.
Yeah, absolutely. I reached out to him because I know what an influence Neil was on him, and in fact, their personal relationship, you know, he got inside the bubble that was Neil Peart. He was a very, very private guy, and he has his reasons. Part of it is a really strong shyness that he had, but... Mike, who's on the line, is one of the guys who was managed to get in there and know him on a personal level. And I know he was really strongly affected by his passing. So Mike's been in everything from Dream Theater to Winery Dog, Sons of Apollos, all these different projects. He's working constantly. So I want to thank him. Mike Portnoy is joining us this afternoon. Mike, thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, my pleasure. Wish it was better circumstances.
Yeah, I understand. You know, I spoke of you being able to know Neil on a personal level. Was that difficult to do? Did you guys have to meet several times, or did you kind of strike up a relationship right away when you first met him?
We struck it up right away, but it took many, many years to get to that first meeting. You know, when I came around with Dream Theater in the mid-80s, you know, Neil and Rush were my number one biggest heroes, and we kind of modeled Dream Theater, you know, after Rush's career. You know, they were our heroes, and he was the one guy that I wanted to meet. And for years and years and years, you know, I met every drummer in the industry except Neil. Neil was like always impossible to get to. He was just such a private person. And then around 2005 or 2006 or so, I was asked to do a guest editorship for a rhythm magazine, drum magazine in England. And they gave me the issue to just interview whoever I wanted. So I picked a few of my heroes to interview, and I interviewed Nick Mason from Pink Floyd and Lars Ulrich from Metallica, Bill Bruford. And then, of course, this was my opportunity to finally meet Neil. And Neil was a trooper. He did the interview. I got together with him in his hotel when he came through town. And, you know, normally if you're a drummer and you go up to Neil, you start asking him questions about drumming or ask him questions about Rush. That's it. You're immediately shut off and you blew any chance of getting to know him.
Yeah.
But because I went in as an interviewer, I was able to fanboy out on this first meeting and ask all the questions I've always wanted to know, because that was kind of my job. So it worked out perfect that I had that ability. And then once I got all that out of my system, he and I, through the years, developed a great relationship, and he was just always such a gracious person, sending me, you know, holiday emails and pictures of him and his daughter dressed up in Halloween costumes, and always inviting me out to soundcheck and everything whenever he came through town, or we'd have dinner together. And just, you know, we ended up developing this relationship over the last 15 years or so, which to me was such an honor to have, because, as you said, he was just so very, very private, and it was very hard to be let into his inner circle.
Yeah. Well, for example, in the meet and greets, Geddy and Alex were almost always available, but Neil never was.
Yeah, he never did the meet and greets. Yeah. In fact, he would as famously known, he would motorcycle his way all morning and afternoon to the gig, show up for sound, which, by the way, right there and then would have been more than twice the energy I put into a day. I wake up for a sound check. He motorcycles 8 hours to get to sound check.
Right, right.
And then does sound check, and then has dinner with Geddy and Alex, goes into his dressing room to warm up, and does the show, doesn't do the meet and greets with Geddy and Alex, and does the show, and literally goes straight from the stage to his bus, and he's out the venue before the closing film is even finished. That was his routine, but he was a very, very private person, and even on tour, he was very secure in this private bubble that nobody could really get to him.
Mike, and I was talking to a friend of mine, you know, when we got word, because it was completely out of the blue. I had no idea. No one had any idea that he was sick, and my friend goes, how typically Neil, that he was so private that they kept it quiet. You and I think a few people had known about this and respected wishes and kept everything quiet. How long ago did you find out that something was going on?
I've known for about 2 years now.
Oh, my goodness.
And never told a soul. It was a secret that I was privileged to have. So I honored that and respected that. So sadly, you know, I've been fearing this day and knew it was coming. But
Mike,
it just
doesn't make it
any less shocking.
Right.
I can't imagine the rest of the world, though, not having a clue. I can't imagine the shock for this to come out of nowhere for most people. I don't even imagine. I can't imagine how that would have hit me if I hadn't known.
Mike, was, if you found out fairly early on, was there hope that the treatment would be successful? Because I'm sure he didn't, go down without a fight.
Well, the fact that he hung around it was about over 3 years shows that he did put up an incredible fight, because I remember when I found out 2 years ago, at that point, nobody, in his family and friends thought that he was going to be around much longer at that point. And he still stuck around another 2 years. So that just shows how much of a fight he did put up. And he had good reason for it. You know, he has a young daughter that was, very young, and he's got he's remarried, and he had this newfound, retirement. So, obviously he wanted to be there, be here as long as he could to be with his family.
Yeah, you could tell how happy they made him after when they came back, after he had found his wife and started a new family. That's when you started to see the personality lighten up in interviews, and he wasn't quite so monotone, and he was much more affable and happy to spend some time with people probing into his personal life a little bit. So you can tell how important that family was to him. Mike, can you speak just a little bit on your influence? What was when do you recall the first time hearing Rush and being blown away by the drums?
I was a teenager. It was the early 80s, around when Moving Pictures came out. And at first, I'd heard of Rush on AOR FM radio out here, Closer to the Heart or something like that, and I didn't realize the depth of the musicality with them. I just kind of heard the high vocals, and I kind of wrote them off as like Supertramp or Styx or something like that.
Right.
But then Moving Pictures came out, and somebody played YYZ for me, and I was just floored.
Yeah.
And I was at an age in my drumming development where I wanted more. I wanted to learn more. I wanted to be better. And Neil became my hero. You know, he was my drum hero, and I was obsessed by him. So at that point, I worked backwards, became obsessed with Hemispheres and Farewell to Kings and 2112 and Permanent Waves, and literally became obsessed. And, throughout my high school years and my first few years at Berklee at college, there was no bigger influence on me than Neil and Rush. It was just, I ate, sleep, drank, chat, Rush, that was it. That was my life.
Yeah. And you know what? One of the things that I found out being a fellow drummer is when I would start to learn to play those songs, you just play with a boom box sitting next to the drum kit, is that even the parts that seemed like, okay, I can handle this, I can play this. Now, you're another level drummer, Mike. You could play it all, and I know that. But I remember in even learning parts that seemed easy, but the moment that I started to play them, I'm like, wait a minute. This is a lot harder than I thought it was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
He was able to sneak those things in there.
Yeah, the bar rose so high once Neil came onto the scene. Before Neil, you had, Keith Moon, John Bonham, Ginger Baker, Mitch Mitchell. But then Neil came out and just rose the bar to a whole nother level, playing these complex patterns and odd time signatures and the mammoth drum kit. I remember just staring at pictures of his drum kit the way most other kids were looking at Playboy centerfolds. I'd be looking at pictures of his drum kit. And, learning these parts, you realized how musical he was. I mean, like you said, right before I came on, I heard there was such intent with everything he played. Everything was so meticulously thought out and planned. He wasn't one of those type of drummers that just did stuff on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
He spent a tremendous amount of time crafting and caring about every single thing he played. And then once he wrote that drum part, that was it. His goal was to consistently play that part each and every night and never stray from it. And that's why he became like the greatest air drumming drummer in the world. You go to a Rush concert and people know every single one of those fills, myself included.
Earlier this year, we had your buddy Paul Gilbert stop by the studio and, was talking about his collaborations with you. And one of the things that he said to me, he goes, Mike has the gift of organization. Meaning that you like to put things together. And I know you've done Rush tribute stuff before, and it is a tad bit early. But do you see a possibility of drummers getting together to do some type of project as a commemoration of Neil's work?
I think it's a no-brainer. I mean, I think everybody wants to do it. I have done several different things, for Rush and for Neil through the years. My tribute band with Paul Gilbert was one. I did the Working Man album back in the 90s with Billy Sheehan. But I think right now everybody is feeling that desire to pay tribute. And, I can guarantee you for the next year or so, every band on earth is going to be, putting in a Rush snippet or a tidbit or a nugget or whatever in their show. But as far as a tribute show of some sort, I mean, it's a natural, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Every drummer on earth has been influenced by Neil. And personally, I mean, I've already even gotten a few emails in the last, 24 hours about that, and I feel like, well, look, I don't want it to be seen like we're trying to exploit his death right at this point. Let things settle. But I think when when everybody's taken a deep breath and has finally accepted this reality, I think something like that is a no-brainer.
Okay, excellent.
It's 93.3 WMMR in Philadelphia, and if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Mike Portnoy about Neil Peart. One quick thing, Mike, he certainly, you guys have touched on his musicianship, but you cannot let the lyrical ability he had to tell a story. I mean, to me, I'm not a musician, but to me, those words just jumped off the page, if you will.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it was one thing if he had just been the drummer, but he was so much more, and being the band's lyricist and writing some of the most poetic lyrics of all time in rock history. And, you know, he started with the sci-fi fantasy kind of stuff with By Torn the Snow Dog and Cygnus X1 and 2112, all the Ayn Rand kind of inspired lyrics. But then, you know, as he got a little further on, he became this incredible poetic intellect. You know, his lyrics were just, you know, the more that things change, the more they stay the same, you know, constant compromises and endless prizes and constant, I can't speak.
I know. Yeah.
And the illusion of integrity. I mean, I can't wait. I can't pretend a stranger's long awaited friend. I mean, you could just quote them all day long. And every one of these lyrics were just so poetic, so intelligent. He was just such a smart, intelligent person. And then it went beyond that once he started writing books. I mean, his book Ghostwriter, after his first wife and daughter passed away. I mean, that's one of the most inspiring books I've ever read in my life. It's not even about drumming. It's about life and loss and moving on and you know, growing up. And it's, you know, and then he went on to write so many more books through the years. So, yeah, he was just such a deep intellect with so many gifts.
An exceptional human being. All right. Well, listen, Mike, I appreciate your time today, and we'll be in touch under better circumstances down the road, man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime. We appreciate it. Mike Portnoy on to talk about Neil, who obviously, you know, was a big, big, huge, the biggest influence on him and so many drummers throughout the years, me included. I've been, you know, I try to dust off the chops from time to time and go back in and dive into the Rush catalog and see what I can, you know, still play or learn how to play. And it's just, I'm always fascinated because he will take little phrases and phrases that repeat. He'll play it one way, and then the next time he plays it, he'll change it just slightly. And then the next time he'll change it just slightly after that. And you see exactly what he's doing. It's a progression. An amazing musician. And, you know, you touched on the lyrics, Pierre, and so did Mike. And as the band aged, so did his approach to it. You know, like Mike was saying, he started off with the fantasy sci-fi stuff, and then he started getting philosophical, and then he started getting personal and started telling stories. And the language got less intricate and more simple and to the point. Roll the bones. Why are we here?
Because we're here. Roll the bones. Why does
exactly.
It happen? Don't worry about it, because it happens. Deal with it. Roll the bones. You have selected, Preston, a beautiful song that Rush fans are going to love. It's 9 minutes and 28 seconds. Would you care to introduce it?
Yeah, I figured we'd play this right after Mike, because in the documentary, which is called Beyond the Lated Stage, there are a number of musicians that specifically cite this song as the benchmark. If you could play this on guitar, bass, or drums, you were officially a mother effer, and that's all there was to it. And it's the one song in the catalog that you attained to be able to play note for note this instrumental. It's amazing. It's off of Hemispheres. And I've always called it La Via Strangiato. Some people call it La Villa, but I call it La Via Strangiato.
On 93.3 WMMR. La Via or La Villa, depending on how you say it, Strangiato from Rush on 93.3 WMMR from Hemispheres, and Pierre Robert along with Preston Elliott, and we are celebrating the life of the amazing drummer, Neil Peart. Thanks again to Mike Portnoy for checking in earlier. That's all 9 minutes and 30 seconds of La Villa Via Strangiato here with me and Preston. We got this one guy on the phone. Let's just see what he has to say. We can't keep track of all these, but good day, citizen. What is your name?
Bill Haynes. How are you guys?
Oh, we're doing good. But tell us what you were going to mention, Bill. You're from Mount Laurel, I believe.
Yeah, Mount Laurel. I grew up in Browns Mills. When I was about 13 or 14, I was a camper at Camp Okanikan in Medford. And one of the activities that day was, you know, like be a DJ for the camp for like a half an hour. So I went with the counselor and he's like, go through the album, see what you want to play. And I was like, I remember vaguely at the time, basically very infrequently hearing Tom Sawyer. I'm like, yeah, that'd be kind of cool. And he goes, no, you're not playing that. Absolutely not. He says, you're playing this. You're playing Red Barchetta from Moving Pictures. And that right then and there was the end all and be all. I was a Rush fan for life from that point.
Wow.
That to me is one of the best songs ever. And I've been following Rush. I mean, I've read all of Neil's books. One of his books, Roadshow, because he's an avid motorcyclist as we know. He started off in Florida, came up 95, came up over the Cape May Lewis Ferry, up through Chatsworth, up Route 72, down 38 to play in Camden. He documented all of that. So you knew he was a real person. He wasn't someone... He was real. That's just all you can say about it.
He was very real. I read Ghost Rider and Neil when he was on his motorcycle treks. I mean, he certainly enjoyed the finer things in life. He was successful many times over, but the guy would stay in a rat motel if he needed to, and it wouldn't bother him or the slightest bit. And he loved remaining anonymous and being able to just meet people. And I was reading an article about him recently. The thing about Neil was he didn't want you to talk about him. He wanted to learn from you. He wanted to find out about you. He was a constant vessel of information. He wanted to have input all the time. He didn't really want to give it per se. He wanted to receive it. He wanted to fill his head as much as possible. And part of that was getting out and meeting people, but not without the guise of this rock star around him. And so, he's a real guy, man.
Yeah, he really influenced me when his first book came out, Riding Across West Africa on Bicycle. And he wanted to meet the real people. He, like you said, he didn't want to be a rock star. He wanted to meet you. And that kind of got in my, because I like to travel a lot. And that's kind of my, the way I like to travel. I like to see the real place, meet the real people. And I never heard Neil say this, but I think if he heard me say this, he would probably agree. Because he liked to travel so much and document it, was traveling makes the world smaller, but the heart bigger.
Nice. That's great. That's great.
Well, thank you very much for your call, Bill. I appreciate it.
Hey, not a problem, guys. Keep rocking. I appreciate it. Take care.
Right. Yep.
A couple of other notes. Dan in Doylestown feels sad and like a lost puppy. Alex in Hillsboro, New Jersey. My first Rush show was the 87 show in Jersey. My 22nd and last was the R40 show in Philly. Eric in Hamilton, New Jersey. Sean in Levittown checking in. Someone else wrote, I lost my dad when I was just 13, but I discovered Rush shortly after. And that was with the Presto album. I immediately bonded to Neil's words. Jim in Sicklerville, Deborah, who saw them with Montrose. This is a difficult loss to absorb. Patty and Alex. And loved the opening this morning with Xanadu and Pete in Chalfont. Some of the nice texts and notes we had gotten. Mike in Bethel Township and Timothy in Stillwater, New Jersey, wanted backstage passes with Rush on the Roll the Bones tour from MMR. So there you go.
One of the things about the band is they had a reputation for being a guy's band. And when you go to the show, you certainly see a hell of a lot more guys than you do ladies. And the band knew it, and we have a great clip from Neil commenting on trying to drag your girlfriend to the show, even though she doesn't like the band.
If your girlfriend doesn't like us, please let her stay home or at least give her earplugs.
Right, thank you. That kind of is like the I Love You Man clip, too. You know.
Yeah.
Want to get some Neil Peart all up inside? No.
Not really sure. Yeah.
Feel Rushified. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that. So we'll take a quick break, which we need to do at this point.
And also, can I mention, if we can get this together, if we can get the audio together, we're definitely going to play one of Neil's solos before the tribute's up.
You and I have talked a few times since this happened, and I said the one thing I would really, Preston had a lot of ideas, and I really wanted to defer to you for this whole program and facilitate whatever you desired. He said, well, what would you like? And I said, I'd like to hear a drum solo in its entirety, because... And I was listening to one from I found one online last night from the 30th anniversary tour, really filmed beautifully, you know, from above and from the sides and that whole light show that would go along with it. It was a sonic experience. You know, I, with all due love and respect to drummers, I don't know that I want to hear a lot of drum solos anymore. Occasionally, here and there, and, you know, some nice fills here and there, but the days of the, you know, 30,000 hour drum solo, I don't know if that's something that's personally for me. It may be for you, in which case that's fine. It's all individual, music is, but his drum solos were transformative. Mm-hmm. They lifted your spirit and they took you somewhere. It was a sonic aural, A-U-A-R-L experience that really was transformative.
Yeah, they had chapters. They had segments.
Yeah.
That's the thing about them. And the one that I'm going to have us play, I think is the it's the perfect drum solo. It is constructed perfectly. So hopefully we'll get to that a little bit later on.
Stay with us. We're right back in just a moment.
MMR rocks.
Stop, hold it there.
Stop. Hold your goddamn horses.
Hold your fire, as Rush would say.
Well said. Hmm. Preston and Pierre, and we're going to play Limelight in just a moment. But before we do, Preston and I were in a very ethereal discussion about life and death and the afterlife and other such things during the break. But we're here to celebrate the life of someone whose life was just cut short, whose name is Neil Peart. How old was Neil?
Neil was 38, I believe. 68,
okay.
67 or 68, I should have probably looked that up.
That's all right.
But too young and too sudden and all those things. He had suffered from brain cancer. It was a fairly rare type. Only 20,000 people in the U.S. get it each year. And I was saying, not to be much of a downer, but it's terrible that as an intellect as he was, that it was the organ in his body that he fed the most, his brain, that is where, you know, it took him. So it's just a sad state.
But what a fascinating life. I mean, again, aside even from the music, as has been touched on, you know, his travels and his travelogues and his books. I saw a documentary on them that was, it must have been the one you've referenced a few times before.
Beyond the Lighted Stage?
Yeah. You know, and his story is such an interesting one. And then his perspectives and then his personal tragedies. You know the story probably better than I do, but prior to his current family, wasn't his wife and daughter.
His daughter was leaving for college. I think she was 19 years old and she was driving. It was a long drive and she was in a single car accident. She died. That was devastating, obviously, for the family. Within the span of a year, his wife came down with cancer and died from it. So he loses the two people in his life, the two people he's closest to in his life, in less than the span of a year.
How long ago was that?
That was, you know what, Pierre, I don't remember. It would have been around the time that they took their big hiatus. Hang on, because I have the dates of all the albums here. It would have been around 95, 96, somewhere in that.
Does he have another child by his first wife? Or
no, that was their only child.
Child.
Yeah, it was his only child, and he's since remarried after that tragedy and had a baby girl. And I was, you know, when Mike Portnoy was on earlier, I said it was post that you could see he was a new person. His personality started to come out more, and he wasn't. If you watch old interviews of him, he's very monotone. He's very clinical, very dry. Later on, after he got married again, started a family, he really started to open up, and you can tell he was even happier than he had ever been. So that's a blessing. It's a beautiful thing.
It is, and it kind of leads us to the Limelight clip that you've selected. Tell us about that.
As smart as Neil was, as much as he loved music, I think that he wasn't. I think he overlooked one thing on his drive to be a professional musician and a successful professional musician was the fact that if you do become one, people are fans and they want a piece of you. They want a part of you. Now, that's a little foreign to him because I remember seeing interviews when he said, I was the biggest Keith Moon fan in the world. It would never dawn upon me to go knock on his hotel room door and try to introduce myself or intervene in his life in any way, shape, or form. It was just foreign to him. But we know how it is. You see rock stars that you love and want to emulate. You want to get to know them. You want an autograph. You want a picture. You want to tell them how much they mean to you. It all seems very intrusive to Neil because he's so shy, painfully shy. He had since gotten past that later on in life and gotten better with it. But it did lead to the song Limelight. That's what the entire song is about. And here's a clip of him talking about that.
Just my attempt really to explain how it felt. You know, that's really how it was. And I tried to explain that introverts do not understand, or extroverts do not understand introverts. The idea of being shy to them is some kind of poison. If you think back to school days, I read a quote recently that all of us are the people that high school made us. Yeah. Okay, and if shy people in high school, I remember they're stuck up. They're conceited. They think they're better, you know, just for being shy. So that persists. And if you are that way in a public field, unfortunately, it's a huge disadvantage, but it just made me uncomfortable and embarrassed. And I just tried to explain. And I can't tell you how many younger musicians, authors, and athletes and actors have come up to me in life and said what that song came to mean. Suddenly they understood, I can't pretend a stranger is a long-awaited friend. Michael Chabon, the author, just said that to me recently when he had a book signing, and with all this expectation of people thinking they know him and his work so well, and he doesn't know them at all. You know, it's a real disadvantage. And there's an old English expression when somebody calls your name, said, hey, George, you have me at a disadvantage. And it's I don't know you, you know. So anyway, I was just trying it in a really neutral sort of way and hopefully a poetic sort of way, just to explain how it felt. And hey, what mattered? You know, really what mattered to us was always the music. It was to be, not to seem.
Oh, this song didn't quite work. I already had it there. God damn it. I'm sorry. So if you wanted a super technical, I had it all set up to go right into the song. It had started before, and when I didn't want it to start, and now I can't make it start. Now, hang on.
No, it's all good.
I've got it under control. All right, let's try it again. Smooth as silk. MMR rocks. You get what you get.
When I started to get around 11 or 12 years old, I was banging around the house with chopsticks on my little sister's playpen and smashing up pots and pans, and my parents got the idea that I liked to hit things with sticks. So for my 13th birthday, they gave me drum lessons. This changed everything.
Yes, it did.
I guess so. I love that. Just love that clip. Preston has pulled some amazing clips that we are playing back for you as we do a tribute to the late Neil Peart of Rush and the sounds of that amazing three-piece. Again, you know, you see these three-piece musical outfits that are out there on the road, and sometimes we find it quite amazing how much music three people can make. Certainly was the case with them. Limelight was preceded there by Neil talking about the origins of that song. And as we've also mentioned over the course of this day, not only was he a phenomenal player, but an amazing lyricist. That Geddy and Alex would come up with the music and that Neil would come up with these lyrics time and time again. Really quite special.
I know Roll the Bones is one that you love. Time Standstill is one of my favorites, and it really opened up my eyes to making sure that when the moment is happening and it's here, and whatever that moment may be, acknowledge it, embrace it, know that it's happening, and spend some more time than you're allowed with it, believe it or not. And I do that if I happen to all of a sudden feel, wait a minute, this is special. I need to stop for a second. I need to think about this because these moments come and go.
Right.
And then sometimes in hindsight, you don't realize how special they are. And I try to be a little more mindful. And I think that's where, you know, mindfulness, mindful meditation and things like that, where we are in time and space right here and now. It's really important. And that song, so simply stated, the words are not big and difficult, although he does talk about transcending and stuff like that in it. But it's a basic, awesome message that I absolutely love.
It's so important, and it's something each of us can do at any second. I mean, even if you're, you know, cleaning the toilet, you're thinking, oh, this is awful. But wait a minute, you're in the moment, mm-hmm. you know, and on a lovely day like this, a lot of people are listening to us driving and enjoying the music and the conversation and freezing those moments, you know. This is a very special moment for me, being able to come in and help you to achieve your vision of expressing your love for this amazing, phenomenal, talented man who's no longer with us. So this is a great moment for me.
Agreed.
Also, there's forget it and we move on to another aspect of Neil's life, I was watching videos last night of him and one of his heroes, which happened to have been the legendary drummer Buddy Rich. Mm. And there was a performance somewhere where he got to step in and either play with Buddy Rich's orchestra or a like-minded group of musicians. And he, in a very simple, relatively speaking, by Neil terms, drum kit, and he, his whole goal was to channel Buddy Rich.
Well, I'll go a step further. It was his idea.
It was
called Banging for Buddy. He did two separate ones, and he produced it. He gathered the drummers. He got Steve Smith and Vinnie Caliuta and Kenny Aronoff and all these wonderful musicians from all drummers from all these different aspects of straight up jazz to rock to pop and so forth. And they came and they learned and they played songs with the Buddy Rich Orchestra because they all agree. Buddy Rich was the greatest hit ever walked the face of the earth. He was that good. And if you don't believe it, go back and find some old videos and you'll go, dear Lord, that guy was incredible. And they all wanted to pay tribute to him. And Neil gained such an appreciation for Buddy and the world of jazz that at a point in his career, he actually changed completely his style of playing. He went back to an old guru, this guy named Freddie Gruber, who has since passed, and said, will you teach me from square one on how to play drums all over again? And he relearned everything. He changed his drum grip. He spent years working on it. So even though he had gotten to a technical level, he was still open to learning and trying new things. But he had a huge appreciation for Buddy. Yeah, there's great videos of him playing with the Buddy Rich Orchestra that you can find online.
It's really, really cool to see it. I highly recommend that. We will take a quick break and we'll come back with more of our tribute to Neil Peart, Preston, and Pierre. Stay with us here at 93.3 WMMR.
MMR rocks.
And now we continue our salute to Neil Peart. I'm Pierre Robert, joined by Preston Elliott. It's 93.3 WMMR in Philadelphia. And I wanted to take us to the Clockwork Angels tour, which was a really spectacular piece of music. And then the concert tour with the steampunk theme was really cool. But before we get there, another clip that you selected.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty cool. They the thing about Rush being that three-piece band was that they all made it a point to agree on everything they did. These guys, I mean, I'm sure like anybody else, they had disagreements from time to time, but they were always together on what they did. Very Three Musketeers-esque. And Neil comments on what it's like to be in a three-piece band and how they make their decisions.
A three-piece band can't be a democracy. You can't have two against one. So everything that comes about is by consensus, and that's the beautiful thing in terms of the work that we do. Even what we're undertaking now, where instead of spending this whole year or more making an album, we thought, well, we'll record a couple new songs, then go on tour. Because there's a certain exigence. We all know we're kind of in our prime right now, at our peak musically, and feel it, and know that can't possibly last forever. So there's a bit of urgency. You know, I'm proud to say I'm 58. I'm a rock drummer that lived till 58.
58 years old at the time. He was pretty proud of that, and
as well he should be.
Because leading up to that, the interviewer was talking about some of the other greats, John Bonham, Keith Moon, and so on, who were cut way short of their their prime. So he was making a comment on that.
Those, though, often by virtue of their own self-destructive behavior.
And he had made the point that, that business, and at that time, lent itself to that type of thing.
Right.
And you had to be careful. You had to, have the wherewithal to not fall into those traps.
Yeah, I saw The Who three times with Keith Moon. And the drumming that guy did, but I mean, there was no he took all of his gas tank and then burned the tank.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the kind of way he played and lived. One has a sense that Neil took much better care of himself through the various things that he went through. So back again to the Clockwork Angels tour. Did you see that tour?
I did, and admittedly, I had kind of phased out of the new music coming out from Rush for a stretch. I'm if there are 10 levels to Rush fandom, zero being you don't know who they are, and 10 being they're the most important thing in the world to you, I'm probably like at a 6.5 on the Rush nerd scale.
I thought you were higher.
There are some people that are really into the band. I mean, I don't go home and listen to the Fountain of Lament or any, I don't get really deep into it. They were super important to me, but I couldn't tell you who you know, where, what studio this song was recorded in. That's the mega fan. But I'm there certainly have been super important to me and Neil specifically. But I had and about the times that, you know, like Vapor Trails and Test for Echo and Snakes and Arrows and I'm sure I'm missing one, Counterparts, I kind of phased out a little bit. I gave it a try and I was like, it's not quite speaking to me. But when Clockwork Angels came out, I was back in full force. Number one, it was a concept album. They hadn't done that in a long, 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 long time. And it sounded fresh. It sounded like old Rush. It sounded experimental and aggressive. And it had a story threading through it that Neil had written. And I was totally in. So I did what I always recommend people do if they're going to go to a concert, is listen to that band's most recent album before you go to the concert. You will enjoy it so much more if you spend a little bit of time to get to know the music, because they're going to play it. It's a different time now because there are songs trickle out and not necessarily, here's an album of 14 songs that you need to check out, and we're going to play a lot of them on tour. It's a little bit different now. But with this, and it was concept, and I knew they were going to play the majority of it, I spent a lot of time with it. I came to love the album, and I thought the concert was fantastic. And they had an orchestra on stage. It was so cool.
It's interesting because I remember talking with Jason Fayon, my former producer, still an air person here on the weekend, runs the board for you guys all the time, an amazing Rush. And he and I were doing after coverage at the center. And I had actually lamented. I said, I could have heard a few more hits. And he goes, no, you missed, you know, they did this and they did this and they did this. And of course, you know, for the fan that knew that intimate stuff, it was bliss.
Yeah.
And your advice is dead on. And I should have done what you recommended. But from the record, you've selected Headlong Flight.
Yeah, it's a great, powerful, driving song, and I love it. So I figured it'd be a good one to play today.
On 93.3 WMMR, this is Rush. Headlong Flight on 93.3 WMMR. What an amazing piece of music and an amazing record that was, and an amazing tour. The production on that tour, I love steampunk, so yeah, that was very much in evidence. But I, you know, I'm a fan of album artwork, and I talk about it a lot, lamented, and you guys were having a discussion one day, you know, and you guys are as high-tech as any human beings I know. And that's a compliment, by the way. It's not a diss in any way. But you and Steve and all of you referenced that you listen to songs more individually and would not get necessarily a CD or an album these days. It's understandable. It's the way a lot of people are. However, I came on it later and I said, you guys were talking about this earlier, and I must confess, I find that sad because artists still make albums. And an album has got a story to tell. And, you know, that particular album really did. And the artwork was a part of it, you know. And although the day of perhaps getting a record from your record store and sitting down on your couch and listening to it, maybe that day is gone. But to the degree that somebody can still get a full piece of music and look at the artwork and see where that record takes them, I just still recommend that.
Yeah, no, I do like that and appreciate that when it's you know, like a band that's put that into the entire project and that it's all meant to be one body of work. I love that. Rush did it wonderfully. A lot of great bands did it. And we had mentioned with that song and that tour that they had an orchestra on stage to create some of the sounds that you're hearing. I think it's the only time that they've ever on tour had other musicians come along with them to play, because Rush was always very proud about the fact that they could pull off the sound that they did with just the three of them, either creating the music or triggering the music via sequencers and so on. They had programmed it all, but they would do it. So guest musicians were a rare thing for them, and so it was cool for them to take that group on tour with them. And it led me to this next song that we're going to play, because on the recording of it, there is actually a guest musician, which was rare. And we'll play another song later on that has another guest musician, Amy Mann, for Time Standstill. But on the Signals album, they enlisted a gentleman by the name of Ben Mink to play on a song, which actually a guy had tweeted at me, essentially kind of putting me to task to see if we would play this. And I'm glad because we got the permission to just go deep in music if we wanted to today. So on the album Signals, I always loved this song. And this guy, Ben Mink, plays electric violin on this. It sounds like a synthesizer, but it's actually a guy playing a violin. And the song is about getting past your prime. It tells the story of a ballet dancer who it's too painful to do any longer and a writer who can't come up with the ideas any longer. It's called Losing It. But this is stereotypical Rush in that it's in an odd time signature. In fact, it's in several odd time signatures. It goes from 5/8 to 11/8. There might even be a 13/8 section in there. But you, as the casual listener, probably don't even notice it. It's just easy to let it flow in and out. And you're not going, that was weird. That doesn't make sense to me. But Rush were experts at that. They would take odd time signatures like 7/4 and make them feel like you could tap your foot or clap your hands along to them and not know that they were doing this really interesting technical thing that intrigued and challenged them as musicians, you know? I thought this would be perfect to play in that. So this is Losing It from Signals.
On 93.3 WMMR. The song is called Losing It from the Signals album on 93.3 WMMR. And should you just be joining us, we've been a couple of hours in now to a tribute for Neil Peart of Rush, who we lost on Tuesday, actually, but didn't find out about it until late Friday. I was coming back from our day off on the slopes in the Poconos when my phone started blowing up, and I was actually in a rest stop when I got a call from Preston. Said Chuck D'Amico had suggested maybe we come in on Sunday and do something. So that is the origins of why we're here. So thanks to Chuck for that idea and for Bill Weston. Also to Marissa for getting a bunch of stuff set up, as did Ryan Shuttleworth and Pancake and Brian from BP Photography. He's been here taking course phone photography. Calls.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Did I say from BP Photography?
From Course Photography.
Well, you call yourself BP. I don't know what your name is.
By the way, I can't believe we just played Losing It on the radio. That was pretty damn special, Pierre. That would never get played on the radio.
You're right.
Never get played on the radio.
I really do love Rush, but I didn't even know the song.
Yeah.
So forgive my ignorance on that point, but I love looking at the text screen because fans listen on so many different levels. So a lot of people turn on the radio. They want to hear something that they know. Very understandable. So that's why you often do hear something that's familiar. Maybe it's a hit, maybe it's a song from a catalog of any given band. However, there are all these other songs, and so occasionally, you know, something MMR's always had, the A to Z's are great proof of this, where we, on a semi-regular basis, will also take you deeper and show you some of the other songs that, you know, are part of that mix. It's interesting because the fans will always text in for a deeper cut, as did this guy. Thank you. Paul and Magnolia, I just love this. What was the other one? Godspeed Neil said Beth in Hamilton, but this other guy said, I've been wanting this and asking for it for years. And finally, Greg in Boyertown. Effing right, Preston. I've requested this song three times since Friday and haven't heard it yet. And thank you for playing it now. It takes a while, but we got you, Greg, and Paul and Magnolia and some of the other nice notes saying that a lot of people are enjoying us being here. I'm very much enjoying being here on this lovely Sunday afternoon, and we appreciate you being with us as well. Were we going to do a clip?
Yeah, we're going to play a clip, and I forgot what it was.
this is being on tour, some touring of his own on tour.
Yeah, yeah. Pierre, it's no secret to those who are fans that Neil liked to get out and see things. And he also liked to, and he explains in this, how to avoid the struggles that come with being on tour and what you can fill your time with, because he was just he was a knowledge freak and he just wanted to fill his head, and whether that be with words on a page or scenery or some type of an experience, he needed something outside of the mundane hurry up and wait that it comes with touring. It's in between shows. You get here and then you got to wait until it's time to blah blah blah, do whatever you got to do. So in this clip, he talks about the things that he's done throughout the years, and a big part of that in the last latter part of his life was motorcycle touring. And in fact, on those last few tours, he would leave the show, as Mike Portnoy, who called in earlier, said. He would leave as soon as the show was over. He'd get on his motorcycle and he would take off to wherever the next show would be. And he would tour the country that way. Those guys would fly. He would ride his motorcycle, and he had a schedule very specific of where he would roll in and when, how much time he would have in between shows to get from A to B. And part of that was this cool little challenge to him. It was almost like a treasure hunt of mapping out the path that he was going to take and what he was going to see along the way and the things he wanted to get between here and there. And it was a really cool thing for him to fill his time with. He ended up writing books about it, and it became a big part of his life. So in this, he talks about those things.
It's part of an ongoing conspiracy to get out of the touring so-called life. And early on, it became like hide in a room and read books. And then in the 80s, I got a bicycle and then started traveling on days off. I would ride from city to city if they were close enough, or go out on a day off and just go out in the country. And I started touring the art museums of different cities of America, because so many of those Midwestern cities you wouldn't expect, St. Louis, you know, Kansas City, Buffalo has a great art museum. So that was nourishing for a while. And then the mid-90s, motorcycling gave a whole new scale to it. And I thought, I can do a whole tour by motorcycle. So I have a bus and a trailer. Basically, I sleep in a truck stop on the bus, yeah, and then unload the bikes and just ride. And on days off, I can go to all the great scenic areas of America, or the small towns and back roads and the dirt roads and the mountain roads and all the wonderful scenery that America and Canada and Europe have to offer.
Now, I'm sorry. I was going to say, in the early part of their career, I remember in seeing an interview with him, he would always make it a point to, when he got to a new town and he had some time, two things he would do. He would find a bookstore and he would find a museum. And those were the things he loved to do. He loved to find out about what was going on, where he was, what the history was, and also some kind of knowledge that he could take from that.
We must have had a field day in this city, because we're so, you know, rich with museums, from the Barnes Museum, the Philadelphia Museum of Art, the Rodin Museum, Academy of Natural Sciences, Ben Franklin, Institute. I mean, just so many great things that are happening in this town. Another thing they did on tour in the earlier days and back in the 80s, I got invited to the Mooshaloo, and after a Rush show, if they had a two-night stand, they would have a party for their crew on the after the first show. And there was a party that Kevin Gunn and I went to on the Mooshaloo with Rush. And I don't know how we got invited to it, I don't remember too much about it other than, let's say, one of the three members, Neil, was smoking something, and Kevin Gunn was right next to him and fully expected that this item would be passed over to Kevin. And Kevin has never forgotten the fact that one of them, Neil, bogarted.
Oh, he bogged him.
Apparently just standing there on the deck of the Mooshaloo in this private party.
Smoking it like a cigarette.
Yeah, smoking it like a cigarette and going, excuse, yo, bro, what's going on over there? These are the funny little memories as you progress through life and, you know, memories of bands that you've loved or encountered. You know, and I wonder when he went on these tours, he went, when he'd hop on the, he would solo, right? No security or anything following him.
No, he liked that way. He did grander tours where his friend would come along and they'd ride together. But for the most part, yeah, on these in-between shows, sometimes I think it was Brutus might have been his friend. But they would sometimes go out together and do this. But yeah, for the most part, he was solo.
Wow, yeah. So cool. Yeah. Preston and Pierre here, and we're enjoying the life of Neil and trying to celebrate that life and bring it to you as well. We take a break. We've got some more things we want to get to, including we will get to a legendary drum solo. I don't know exactly where we'll be on time when we come right back, and time is not my specialty. So we've got a few more things to get to. Stay with us as we continue this celebration right after this.
MMR rocks. Period.
Pierre and Preston here, continuing a celebration of the life of Neil Peart, an amazing man, first of all, and an amazing citizen of the world, and certainly an amazing musician, lyricist, and, quite obviously, drummer. We heard from Jack in Mount Laurel, who said, Neil's why I became a musician. We heard from Zach over in New Jersey, said, love that you guys are there. This is an amazing celebration. Heard from Mary. I can't read your writing.
Sorry.
All right, Maddie, sorry. Brian is kind enough to not only take pictures, but go to the phones for us from time to time. Matt in Massachusetts is enjoying this. And as we continue, I had mentioned, Preston and I had talked a few times And I said, you know, I really want to hear a drum solo. And we talked earlier about the sonic nature of Neil's drum solos. And you picked, relatively speaking, an earlier one.
I wanted to go with this. I wanted to do this for the drummers. Now, Neil, as he advanced in his career and the drum kits started getting bigger and the technology started changing and he started using triggers and samples and things like that, it certainly was exciting and it made the drum solos a more orchestral part of the live show. And I know you appreciate that, Pierre, because he would throw in jazzy things. He would throw in African rhythms and really esoteric instruments that you hadn't heard before that were really cool sonically. But I wanted to go a little bit more roots.
Because I was watching a really beautifully produced video from the 30th tour and from all these angles, and then they backed off and they had video going in the background of these dancers and horns and orchestras as he was triggering those devices. And again, that's relatively speaking more current, but I mean the Rush package when you would go to see them was a complete production piece, going back to the rocket launching, you know, of the Apollo missions, to everything in between, to washing machines on stage, to, you know, funny moments, his, you know, the videos Preston mentioned earlier of them in character. But I found great enjoyment out of that. But this, again, what you want to reference goes back earlier.
It's a little bit more primal in his solo days, because they were certainly a big part of the show. But when I heard this, and still to this day, I think it is a perfectly constructed drum solo. And as I said earlier, his drum solos have chapters. They have sections, parts that change and he expands on for a little while, and they have their own voice because he did have a voluminous kit. Even before it got with the 360 kit and all the electronics and stuff, he still had a really large, he had a lot of voices to play with. But Exit Stage Left is one of the greatest live albums I've ever heard. And when he goes into the solo in YYZ, it's, to me, just absolute drum solo perfection, the way they weave it in and out of that song. And I've always loved it. And I thought it would be awesome if we could play this today.
My honor to play it for you, sir. Here it is on 93.3 WMMR, the song live and the solo included. MMR Rocks. Live. And that is YYZ from Exit Stage Left. Was that the first live album from the band, Preston?
The first live album was All the World's a Stage. And Neil did a solo in that one. And that's where we get the professor, Neil Peart, because Getty says it. And I believe that's leading into the solo. It's been a long time since I've listened to All the World's a Stage. But Exit Stage Left, I think, the perfect live album. They do a wonderful part where they play the trees and then they very slowly fade out of that song and make their way into Xanadu. They pull off Jacob's Ladder, and I just, man, when that album came out, I just didn't know what I was. I couldn't believe they were playing that stuff.
The sonic ability of the band, Trees, is another example of some of the effects that you hear in it are drum effects. Mm-hmm. I love that song. It's one of my favorite Rush songs, and you can hear Neil doing, you know, again, I think I mentioned you off the air. I'm a person who doesn't speak music, but I understand music,
right,
if music is another language.
Right.
And I can hear this sonic thing that he's doing during the Trees, which has always grabbed me. And it takes me to a forest.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm in that forest.
He uses temple blocks and wind chimes and all kinds of interesting ambiance type of instruments to fill that out and give you that flavor. By the way, I was telling the story off air to you, Pierre, about YYZ and what that song is and what it means. So the beginning, Neil's playing an instrument. It's called a crotali. It's this little bell type of instrument. And it starts off ding, 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 that right there. It's actually Morse code. And the story is the band was in I believe they were in a private, a chartered plane. They were flying into home, Toronto. And the airport code for Toronto is YYZ. So they heard this ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-dirty-dern thing coming from the cockpit. And they were like, what is that? And they said, the pilot told them it's the homing beacon for Toronto International. And the code is YYZ. So if you go to Toronto International and you get your luggage, it's going to say YYZ on there. That's the airport that you're at. And they found it intriguing and thought it was a really cool sounding rhythm. And Neil made note of that ding 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 ding, which is Morse code for YYZ. And it became the basis for that song. And they actually wrote that instrumental with the airport in mind. The craziness of the beginning of it is to represent traversing the airport and how chaotic and wild that can be when you're trying to get your luggage checked and get your gate on time and go through security and all this stuff. You know nothing about those things, Pierre.
I've got to try that sometime.
And then eventually they get into the solo section and Alex is playing this kind of Eastern feel that's very exotic, and that's supposed to represent international travel and the mystery of where you may be going. And it's really cool when you think of it in those terms. And in fact, I think, we have a clip of that. Why did I just describe it all? Neil, take it away.
The rhythm stuck in my head. I said, guys, let's, So then thematically, we said, well, let's use that airport, so much a part of our lives in those days and after. Let's use that as a metaphor, in a sense. And again, in a playful way, there was no sense, okay, this part is this part and all that. But there is the sense of bustling and coming and going and the grand emotion of that middle section of what airports can be. The airport giveth, the airport taketh away, which is Rick Derringer's song at the time. In our lives, airports were rich with symbolism, departures and comings and goings, and departures and arrivals, separations and meetings, that's... that was kind of woven into the song in a playful way. Oh, the exotic nature of travel too. And Alice's guitar solo, for sure, he wove in that kind of Eastern mode, which gives a sense of the exotic of the airports. When you look at the departures up there, you see Amsterdam, and you see Shanghai and all these places. Airports are, when you strip away the modern-day tedium, they're pretty romantic places. So all of that, I think, informs the composition side of YYZ too.
Pretty
and
cool.
Very cool, and also great people watching spots.
Oh yeah.
So that YYZ was what Pressenden wanted to play. Going back to which live album?
Exit Stage Left,
the second live album.
Correct.
Was that the record with one of the early live albums incorporated all the studio album covers beforehand? It had the woman who's looking on from the stage.
That's it.
And then it had the guys moving the pictures, but they were all kind of incorporated into the live record.
Yeah.
As if to say, here's everything we've done so far and little snippets of it in this live piece of music that you hold.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
And Alex, Neil was not the original drummer, which most huge Rush fans know, but like Working Man, a song that's often requested, does not have... Neil Peart on the drums.
No, it was a guy named John Rutsey, who was, from the area in Toronto that they were in. And he had diabetes and he couldn't tour any longer after they had just released their first album. But also he wasn't musically a right fit for Geddy and Alex because they wanted to be more adventurous and he was more kind of hit driven and straight ahead rock and roll, which is fine. But it's not. It would have been selling those guys short. They had more aspirations. They had higher, technical dreams. And then Neil came in, and dear God, if you listen to the first Rush album compared to Fly By Night, I mean, they walked in and they did By Torn the Snow Dog. What? What? I mean, it had to have, at that time, if you had liked that first album and listened to the second album, your head must have been spinning when you heard it because it was a completely different presentation.
Well, again, and, Neil was capable of triggering all these sounds from his drum kit alone, but let us not exclude Alex, who could make amazing noises out of his guitar. And let us not forget Geddy, who's not only the vocalist, but the bass player and a keyboard player.
With his hands and feet.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, again, three people making a profound amount of music.
Yeah.
We're celebrating the life of Neil Peart, who we do not have with us anymore, sadly, on this planet. But we have time for a few more songs, and Preston and I have selected a couple we like. So we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back and do a little bit more, if you'll stay with us. But a few short moments, a tribute to the life of Neil Peart.
Sticking with what we do best.
What?
MMR rocks.
I'm Pierre Robert, joined by Preston Elliott for a special afternoon of music celebrating the life of Neil Peart, who we learned just Friday afternoon had passed away on Tuesday. And it's a definite, it's adding to this list of people. To me, the most current wave, although we've had rock losses, you know, since the 60s with Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix and Jim Morrison and the like. But the most current wave, if you will, started with David Bowie, I think, in 2016. Mm-hmm. And I was at home, it was like a Sunday night, and Marcus calls me at 2 in the morning. He goes, I think David Bowie has died. I go, impossible. Somewhat in a similar way to Neil, he had been sick for some time, and no one even knew it.
Had no idea.
You know, and all of a sudden, that icon is gone. Mm. You know, and then it almost seemed like it began a domino chain. Some of them we saw, you know, coming. Lemmy was not in the best of health. Certainly Scott Weiland wasn't. But others that we didn't see, you know, the Glenn Frys and... you know, we didn't know Prince's situation and a number of artists that aren't on this planet anymore that were and still are musically a vital part of the structure and the essence of rock and roll. It's been really a pleasure to have you here and have you take time to come in and talk about this guy. Because when you called me on Friday afternoon, you said, for me, this is like Lennon.
Yeah, yeah. I felt the same punch that I did when I found out that that John was taken from us suddenly as well. I was and I was of all places standing in line at a coffee shop getting ready to place an order, and it was time for me to place an order, and I just had glanced down at my phone and I saw from Jackson that Neil was gone, and I just, my wife was with me, and I gasped and she said, what? And I just go, Neil died. And I was like, like this. I was saying things like that, but the just stuff coming out of my mouth. I couldn't believe it because what? Wait a minute. Why? How? We didn't hear that something was wrong and this happened. And so it was just, it was sudden and it was really, it stung, you know?
I mean, it has that shock, but it wasn't sudden in a way because right. He had been ill, but again, none of us knew,
and hence to his private nature,
right? Yeah. You have a piece on Neil on philosophy.
Yeah, and I think it'll lead into the next songs that we're going to play. And Neil was fascinated by the human mind and why we think what we think and why we do what we do, and he explored those things throughout the lyrics of Rush, especially in some of the latter albums. So this is him talking about philosophy.
It's something that I found very useful, again, to bridge the gap between ideas and life, you know, because it's not thought about a lot, but it's certainly true that there's a very strong link between your values and your actions, and between your philosophy, whether you ever think about philosophy or even words of that many syllables. Nevertheless, everyone has one, or a lack of, that their lives are guided by in their actions that they do every day, and the things they want to do and the things that they do do. To me, it's become more important to connect those two, whereas in the past, my writing a lot of times dealt with pure ideas. In the past, it was often my aim to try and express pure ideas in a metaphorical or symbolic way, where I choose symbolic characters that were not necessarily relative to real human beings, but were just symbolic of parts of human nature or parts of circumstances of life that I wanted to portray.
I thought that might be a nice clip to play going into the last couple songs we're going to play, because they do kind of delve into those tones. And we're going to play Roll the Bones, and I know you love that song as much as I do. I never really have spent much time looking into what that song meant to Neil, or diving too much into the lyrics, because I'm just so transfixed by the chorus of it. Why are we here? Because we're here. Roll the bones. Why does it happen? Because it happens. The simplicity of that idea, and what it's always meant to me, is that maybe the greatest mysteries of humankind will always be the greatest mysteries of humankind, and we may, and more likely than not, never know what the answers to those questions are. So why spend too much time worrying about it? That's kind of what I personally get from that.
It also speaks to the second song we're going to play about living life in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but it's our nature as humans to analyze or question. But the line that precedes the chorus says, we go out into the world and take our chances. Fate is just the weight of circumstances. That's the way that Lady Luck dances. Mm. Roll the bones. Why are we here? Because we're here. Roll the bones. But why does it happen? Because it happens. Don't overthink it. Try to accept it. Deal with it in the moment. And so it goes. 93.3 WMMR. Song is called Roll the Bones, and it's a great way to live. We can overanalyze every single thing that comes our way in terms of the stimuli that presents itself on the road of our lives' highways. But sometimes it's best to not overthink it. Stuff, and I'll use that as an abbreviation for the other word that begins with S, stuff happens to all of us. It's not so much the stuff as how we deal with it. Sometimes not overanalyzing it or bemoaning our fate. Oh, my God, why did this have to happen to me? It's a drag if it's something bad. But it doesn't mean you have to stop. It happened. Let's carry on. Let's deal with it. That's your interpretation and mine as well, right, Preston?
Yeah, yeah. It's in a nutshell. And like I said, I haven't really done the research on what it meant to Neil as he wrote it. But as you've said many times, that's what's great about music, too, is you're allowed to make your own interpretations of what it means to you.
Right.
You know? And so that's what I've always taken from that song. I love it.
So many people have checked in. We can't acknowledge all of them. But Dave and Oli texted in. So did Craig in Downingtown, Kathy in North Wales. I'm 55. My name is Pam in Riverside. Never was a huge fan until at 15 years of age. Went to the moving picture show with my brothers who were fans. I was the female minority. I've been Russified ever since. John in Gilbertsville, Eric in Pendel sent us something that he wanted us to see, but we're not able to make videos appear on our texting screen here for whatever reason. George in the 215, Eric in Hamilton, Bill in Pine Hill, Austin in Seacane, and I am 35, and I've heard some of the Rush songs. You've been playing a lot of deeper cuts, and I don't know them, but I'll tell you what, I've been just driving and continuing to drive, listening to it and enjoying it, and I don't think there could be a higher compliment, whoever sent that. Because, you know, there's all kinds of music out there.
You know, Pierre, the people are sharing their concert stories, you know, via the text and so on. So I'm going to share one real quick, if you don't mind, because please. With Neil being gone, I had always hoped that somehow or another I would encounter him. So I had these fantasy scenarios in my mind of how I might present myself to him or carry myself around him because I knew how shy he was. And you can't fanboy, it's going to turn him off right away. And, you know, if I did have a chance to meet him and maybe it was under a circumstance where he was okay with talking about what he did for a living, maybe it was an interview scenario. But if it wasn't an interview scenario, I was going to just, you know, pretend like I didn't know who he was and just see if I could chat with him as a regular person. But if I did sit down with him in an interview, I wanted to tell him a story. And I know he wouldn't know it, but I had a moment. It was at the Grace Under Pressure tour. And I was still in high school. I think I was 16 years old. I had gotten a ticket. I got great tickets. When you had to wait to get tickets, I went probably like 2-3 o'clock in the morning and I went to the ticket outlet and I waited outside in line with everybody else. And it turned out it was a lottery. It didn't matter that I waited in line anyway. But my number got picked right away.
Wow.
I was like one of the first 5 people in line to get tickets. I got second row center seats.
Come on.
For Grace Under Pressure, which is an album I love. This was in St. Louis.
Wow.
So I'm at the concert. I'm loving it. I think, God, who opened up for them? Man. All right, anyway, it doesn't matter. It's beside the point. It was Crocus. Crocus opened up for them.
Wow, Crocus!
All right, so, so I'm standing there, and I'm center. So I'm right between Neil's 2 bass drums. You know, I mean, I've got a great shot right to him. And I'm a teenager. It's the 1980s. There's a lot of weed going around then. I told you at those concerts, you just smoked openly. It didn't matter. And so I had a joint. So I'm sitting there and I'm lighting this joint. And as I'm doing it, I look up and Neil is looking right at me.
Come on.
Full on what felt like eye contact. Pierre, I felt shame. I felt he's looking at the youth of America and going, what in the world is going on here? This 16-year-old kid is in front of me at this show, at my show, and he's sitting there destroying his mind with drugs. And I I felt horrible. And if I ever would have had the opportunity to talk to Neil, I would have shared that story with him. I always wanted to be able to share that story with him.
But see, what you're doing is projecting what we call in cognitive therapy mind reading. You're jumping to a conclusion, mm-hmm. and in your case, a negative conclusion of what he thought of you for doing that. In point of fact, it could be quite the opposite. In point of fact, he could be going, good lad.
Part of the reason I felt that way is because he had such a serious look. You know, he had a bit of a scowl, and when he was playing, he's working, you know, right. for crying out loud, and he wasn't one of those that would pose to the audience. But he had this dead 1,000-yard stare that went right through me. And I'm like, oh,
but
I've let him down.
You didn't let him down. As was said by a number of people, he did not suffer fools. However, that doesn't mean he didn't appreciate his audience. Clearly, mm-hmm. all three of those guys did and still do. But, I don't think he had a super happy face that he
right.
would put on. So I think he looked at you in that quizzical way that he observed all of reality, whether it be in an airport or riding on a motorcycle or on his bicycle touring the backcountry. I think he looked at you and go, oh, there's an interesting citizen. Mm. And I'll bet he wondered, what's that guy's story?
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe I inspired Mystic Rhythms, which was on the next album after that. Who knows?
I actually believe you did inspire. Wait a minute.
We'll go with that.
It's just coming through right now. Apparently, look it. This is an album credit that's just been released. Apparently, Preston Elliott is the inspiration of Mystic Rhythms.
There you go. It happened. I didn't even know it till this very moment.
So there you go.
All right. So I think we're going to do one more.
One more.
Okay. I thought this would be an appropriate one to end on. I know that we've talked about his amazing groundbreaking drumming and his lyric writing, and I think this just this ties into both because lyrically it is my favorite Rush song. It's when he started to get a tad bit more simple with the words, but the themes were big and beautiful. And as we mentioned earlier, I know, and I can speak for Steve Morrison, too. This is his favorite Rush song, lyrically, by far. But it's such a beautiful message to not let the moment get past you, to know when the moment's happening, acknowledge that moment. In fact, the words are, seize this moment a little bit longer, making sensation a little bit stronger. You can be aware that what is happening right now is special. It becomes more special. I've used that many times throughout the years of when something important is happening, acknowledge it, know that this is important, seize it, hold on to it, don't let it go, and it can make that impression that much stronger.
I got goosebumps as you're saying that. The song is called Time Stand Still, and the other thing that augments it so beautifully is Amy Mann, the singer of Till Tuesday, and her just stellar voice joining in with the band, which again was a rare thing to have another player come in. Time Stands Still on 93.3 WMMR. Song just about says it all. Roll the Bones from the album of the same name, and also Time Stands Still from Hold Your Fire. People have been really enjoying the broadcast and being with us pretty much since we started at 1 o'clock with this tribute to Neil Peart, who we lost on Tuesday, but didn't find out about it till late Friday. Paul and Magnolia with us. Someone else wrote a really nice note. Music is what emotions sound like, and Rush brings out the emotion in me. I really like that. This is why MMR is different than any other station on the planet. Thanks for your help in helping us heal, said Paul over in New Jersey. Preston Roll the Bones was my first Rush concert ever. Although I was not a Rush fan, I came out and saw them and then never turned back. Rob in Broomall enjoying it. Great show. Like Preston says another text, I'm an old marching band drummer. I saw Rush when I was 14. It was at the Spectrum for the Grace Under Pressure tour. I've spent the weekend listening to Rush and reading all 9 of my concert programs, plus reviewing the set list. This is a true fan, whoever wrote that. Robert in Coatesville, Caroline in Philly, Mike's listening in Fort Myers. Sammy in Salem, New Jersey, Brent in Delaware, I was the indoor drum line for North Penn, and we did YYZ and Big Money, got first place.
Oh, that's awesome.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
Hearing Preston on the radio on a Sunday is stunning. I love it. That's cool. Mount Laurel is where Mary is from. Metal Mike checking in. Katie in Williamstown. Dave in Spring City. Dave in Harleysville, and on and on and on. The texts go, and that's just some of them, trying to acknowledge as many. But you've been a vital part of this, those of you who have been listening.
Mm-hmm.
We also want to thank those who made it possible. It was Chuck D'Amico's idea that we get together and do something special on Sunday. Would have certainly done something tomorrow in the workforce blocks, but great call from Chuck. And also, of course, Bill Weston and Marissa, who came in early and set some stuff up for us. Sarah, who's been helping us, Ryan Shuttleworth and Pancake. And most of all, you who listen. And, of course, Blake, who was on earlier. Most of all,
Brian
you.
Miller, too.
Oh,
Brian Miller over here.
Jesus,
from
a
Course Photography. He's been taking the phone calls.
I know. Brian came in to take some photos, and then we didn't have a Pancake or Marissa. They all had different activities. So we said, Brian, to the phones. You did what you did well, lad.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Preston, your knowledge of Rush is second to none.
Oh, thanks.
The songs we played are Xanadu. We had Analog Kid. We had Closer to the Heart. Something for Nothing. Power Windows. We had La Villa Strangiato. All 9.5 minutes of it. We had Limelight, Headlong Flight, Losing It. We had YYZ, Live from Exit Stage Left with the drum solo. We had Roll the Bones, Time Stand Still. And, of course, those were the last two songs.
Yeah, and I apologize we didn't get to anything from Permanent Ways, which could be my favorite Rush album, but there's so much material. Did you know, and I saw this little factoid, that after Neil had passed, that apparently Rush is third only to the Beatles and the Rolling Stones for platinum and gold album awards.
Really?
And essentially every album they made through their 40-year career went gold or platinum. I would imagine almost all of them went platinum. And so, yeah, they have that loyal of a fan base that have stuck with them all these years.
And kept growing it.
Kept
you
growing.
Know, too.
Yeah.
It's a tribute because, let's face it, music that doesn't stand up often doesn't get heard as days go on. It sort of fades away, or a one-hit wonder, or, you know, a band that sometimes you'll hear a song or a band that you loved in the 80s and you go back and hear it and it doesn't quite have that same thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, clearly we've touched on all aspects of this band's career. We've played some hits, a lot of deeper cuts. And again, touching on the fact that radio often plays familiar stuff because most people tune in and you want to hear something that you know. So therefore, if we were playing sides of Beethoven or the deepest cut of any given album, it would probably alienate a lot of folks. So our challenge on the radio is to play stuff that you know and are comfortable with, but also turn you on to newer stuff, but deeper cuts from those artists that you've loved for a long time. And there's a balance there. And we're always trying to strike that balance, oftentimes never pleasing everyone, but trying.
Pierre, I believe that Marissa told me before she left that this entire program will be up for podcasting.
Okay.
So if you did miss it, if you want to go back and catch the part that you might not have heard, I think we're going to have that up. I'll let you know for sure tomorrow morning when we're on the air on the Preston and Steve show.
But we're not allowed to carry the music per se, right? Or is if we
I don't
do it
know.
As a kind of a streaming thing? I'm confused about that.
I am too.
I'll ask
Marissa. We'll have answers tomorrow morning.
Right.
By the way, my band is performing next Friday, and we will play Limelight. So just letting
okay.
you know,
okay.
we'll be at the Trap Tavern. And I'm telling you what, Pierre, and it's like this for any band that plays a Rush song, I would imagine. Every time that we play that live and we get done with it and we've successfully made it to the end without messing it up, we all fist bump or high five right there after the song because it's an achievement.
Well, Sarah came in earlier and said she saw some text online or some notice online that said, all right, Rush fans who have a band, now try to play an easy Rush song. Go ahead, just try.
Yeah, try to find an easy Rush song to learn real quick.
Probably not the easiest task. Mm. I would add one final thing to this, which goes, you know, in line with both Roll the Bones and Time Stand Still, is that if there's a band you love, We've lost a lot since I said David Bowie started this whole chain reaction of losses. Some we saw coming, you know, like this that we didn't. I really thought Rush would play again, maybe just a one-off somewhere. I didn't think they would tour, but I thought, you know, we might see them on a stage somewhere. Because to their credit, they sort of did a farewell tour, but it wasn't, you know, it was R40, probably farewell, but not cast in stone,
right.
You know? Which opened up the possibility that maybe they would do something at some point if it was workable. So, obviously, that's not going to happen. But there's other bands that are out there. There are young ones, but there are ones that are and have been on the performing stage for some time. And you might see them coming your way, our way. And you think, as I've done before, you know what? I'll catch them next time.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the lesson. Don't wait till next time.
Yeah.
Time stands still. If you see a band that you love and you go, you know, well, they tour a lot, don't count on it. Don't count on it, you know, and I'm not trying to say that to sell tickets. I'm saying that for your own sense of having seen them and being thrilled that you got a chance to do it. See the band while you can.
Agreed. Yep.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pierre. I'm glad you were free to come in today because I was definitely going to do it. And I don't know how to run the equipment over there like you do.
You used to run from this studio.
It's true. I appreciate you coming in today. And I'm glad we were able to do this. And I'm glad we work at a radio station where we can do stuff like this, you know.
I will only say one kind of boasting thing, and it's because I'm so proud of it, not because of you or me or anything, but this is radio you won't hear anywhere else.
Mm.
And I say that in as quiet a way, not a chest thumping way, but it's radio you're just not going to hear anywhere else. I don't care if it's satellite or podcast or whatever else you might find. Imperfect, because I'm running the board, but live, local, vibrant, and so thank you for letting us be here for 51 and a half years at MMR through a whole bunch of changes, kind of like a band that's been together a long time. We never appreciate your support more than we do right now, and we will be on tomorrow. By the way, in terms of tomorrow, you're going to be announcing the barbecue.
It does happen tomorrow morning, yes.
8 a.m., I think.
I think it's going to be at 8. Yeah, around the Bizarre File time. Around when we're going to be doing Easy Money, too. Cool. So we'll make sure that we reveal the details.
And we'll have more Rush to do on the workforce blocks tomorrow.
Excellent.
So thank you, Preston.
Thank you, Pierre.
All right, we will take a break. Sarah is going to continue in just a moment. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.